Great. Hey, good evening, Shavua Tov. Thank you very much, Rich, for the introduction. And thank you to everybody at Nili. Thank you to Emma in absentia, who worked everything through. Thank you to Robin and to the Cohen family for hosting. Really very grateful. It's lovely to be here. I didn't need much persuading to stay in Chicago for Shabbos. I'm here, as you said, wearing my Midrashet Tehillah director hat. I was interviewing at Hannah Sachs on Thursday, and I had a choice. Do I fly to New York for Shabbos, or do I stay in Chicago? And it took me about 15 seconds to decide what to do. I stayed in Chicago, and I'm very, very pleased that I did. I had a lovely Shabbos. I thought I would have a lovely Shabbos, and I really have. And I'm flying tomorrow morning back to New York, but it's really, really nice to be here. We were talking with Nili a while ago and with other people in Chicago about trying to do something in the summer. That it never happened in the summer, although you've got some summer weather in February, so it feels a bit like the summer. I came here thinking it was going to be negative 20 degrees or something, and it's actually it's lovely. So that's another reason to come here for Shabbos. So I've been asked to speak for around 40 minutes. I hope that works. Hello, Lynn. I hope that works for everybody. I can really talk for as long or as short as you want, and I'm happy to take some questions as well. We're now, you mentioned that March 2023 is when we launched the book, and we're now almost a year on from that, and it's really been a very exciting year. I'm sorry the Brocha's not here, Brocha Polikov, who is the editor co-author of the book with me. I will be doing an event with Brocha in the YU Sfarim sale on Monday night, so if anyone fancies going to the YU Sfarim sale, I don't think it's just singles who are allowed to find Shiduchim in the YU Sfarim sale. I think they allow married people to come as well, but I'm not 100% sure about that. You might have checked before you go, but we are going to be speaking there together, so I'm very excited for that. And then on Tuesday night, I'm speaking in Stern College as well, so that's something else to look forward to, for me anyway, I'm sure. Hopefully we'll have a great evening. Let me tell you a little bit of the history. I'm going to give out a little source sheet, because I think if we're going to have 40 minutes, we should look at a few sources inside. A lot of people probably have the book. Well, somebody bought 6,000 of them. I don't think it was my mum, but he could, but he could have been. And therefore, I think a lot of you probably know what's in the book. And in that sense, maybe what I'm going to say tonight is not such a big chidush, and you're going to say, yeah, fine, I thought you were going to change your thesis or something like that. We are bringing out a second edition this year. It's not going to have anything radically different in it. It's going to have another amazing essay in it that we didn't have in the first book, in the anthology section. And, a few typos here and there and things. Hi. And things that we corrected, some feedback that I got, some new sources, some ideas, some corrections. So I don't know when the second edition is coming out exactly, probably around summertime. So don't wait for the second edition, you can still buy the first one. If anybody wants to buy a copy of the book, I actually have two here. But I also, you can sign up, and I'm very happy to have a whole consignment shipped to Nili in Chicago, and we can work all that out. So I'll just put a sign-up sheet up here at the back. If there's anyone who wants to get a copy of the book, we can get a whole bunch delivered straight to Chicago, and that'll be just fine. Let me tell you a little bit about the background as to how this book came to be. When I was asked by Brocha approached me in 2019. Brocha was a student of mine back from Darche Bina, 2005, 2006, something like that. And she sent me an email in 2019 saying something basically like this. She's on a lot of forums, email groups, chat groups with women who talk about all sorts of issues. And she said that whenever the issue of tzniut comes up, and by the way, I'm going to alternate tonight between tzniut and sneers, so if you get triggered by either one, you'll get triggered by both. Because I am bilingual in that sense and don't have a particular focus. Although when push came to shove, we didn't want to have sneered or sneers in the title of the book, because either one of them would have caused a nightmare somewhere or the other. And actually, my Israeli son-in-law Tzvi came up with Reclaiming Dignity as a title. So we talked about it in the family for about 80 Shabbases in a row, but in the end we did put a sneer with a T at the end here. But when Brocha approached me in 2019, she said that when the issue of sneers comes up on these forums, people become hysterical very quickly. there's enormous amounts of defensive and aggressive and judging and don't judge me kind of back. And Brocha is a social worker, that's her profession. And she said in social work there's an expression where it's hysterical, it's historical. There's something going on under the surface that's causing people to react in this extreme way when people are just raising basic questions. And she said that one of the things that people often said on these forums is that, like, where can I find a book that will be helpful? And there are books, and this is not the first book in history, and there are some books out there that people like, and there are some books out there that people don't like, and different kinds of people have different kinds of preferences. But one of the things that Brocha said that people were doing is referring people to my website. So I have a website, and in case you think I have some kind of fixation or obsession about this topic, I really, really don't. I have, Baruch Hashem, 500 shirim on my website, and only 3 of them are on this topic. So when Brocha said to me, people are going to your website, can you maybe turn this into a book? I said, no rabbi wants to write a book about sneers. Everybody hates all books about sneers. That's like a din in books about sneers. So this is just going to be like, no, I'm not, thank you for asking me, but that's not my topic. If you'd have asked me what I was going to write a book on, it would probably be about, you know, the development of the halachic process or something like that, which I'm, you know, much more into. I've got like 90 shirim about that. So in the end, Brocha said, okay, fine. Then COVID happened. In the middle of 2020, she emailed me back again and said, listen, Rabbi Manning, what are you actually doing now other than trying to work out how to unmute yourself on Zoom and not succeeding? And I said, well, yeah, that kind of sums it up quite well. I was trying to run an institution during COVID, but okay, that's a separate issue. So she said, maybe we can just give it a try. So I said yes, and for basically the summer of 2020 and the summer of 2021 is when this book came into being. And as I said, we launched it last year, and Baruch Hashem, it's had a good reception. I'm sure there are people out there that don't like it. They don't tend to email me. I haven't had any threatening emails about it yet. I've had a little bit of rabbinic response in different directions, which is good, and some of that hope has helped, you know, improve hopefully the second edition as well. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the fundamental ideas behind it. Maybe we could just give these out. Thank you so much. I don't know if I've got enough. I guessed completely how many to make. It's just a two-sided. There's nothing that's going to be too intimidating about this. There are maybe 6 or 7. You don't have to have a sheet. If it's one between two, that's also fine. Really not a problem. There are 6 or 7 issues that I think the book was introduced to address. And Brocha and I talked about this a lot. And I've listed some of them here. One of them, which I think is a problem that we're coming to try and address, is an over-focus on women's clothing and women's bodies on this topic. To the point that a fairly reasonable question that people have asked me is, why is it sanua for a man to talk about sniut? And the answer to that question, often those same people who ask me that question often then follow up with, and isn't it really frustrating that we're always talking about women's bodies and surely sneers must be something more than that? And the answer is yes, your second question answers your first question, which is, it's not sanua for a man to stand up and talk about women's clothing or women's bodies, honestly. And I wouldn't dream of doing that in a focused way. There's a lot of these conversations that have to happen between women. But sniut is far, far broader than that, much broader than that. And I'll tell you in a minute where I was introduced to this breath. And therefore this book, the first and most perhaps important issue of this book is to broaden this conversation to be a conversation that is way, way wider than the issue of women's clothing. The Tanakh refers to tzniut twice. Neither of those issues refer to women or clothing. The Chazal refer to tznuim and tzniut hundreds of times, and almost none of those issues refer to women or women's clothing. Even when the Gemara focuses on a specific woman, I'm sure you all know, if you are in a Jewish high school, you'd have been told this, the story about Kimchit. Kimchis was so, you know, tzanua, she never let her hair, you know, be uncovered in the house, etc. And she had the merit to have a whole family of Kohanim Gedolim, etc. There's a lot more to that story than that. But it's interesting that a lot of people don't realize that there's a parallel account in the Gemara about Rabbi Yosei where it says almost exactly the same thing, that the man had so much sniyud, he never let the beams of the house see his like undergarments, etc. So even Chazal are very careful to try and make sure this is a balanced thing. So we wanted to try and bring this conversation to a much wider wider focus. How did I ever get in touch with this issue? Well, I was in Rav Berkowitz's kollel you mentioned at the beginning. Rav Yitzchak Berkowitz, who you know many of you will probably know, because many of his talmidim have gone on to be rabbonim all over the world, a lot in America. In fact, my chavrusa from the kollel, Josh Marder, lives here in Chicago. We learned our way through smicha together. We're very unlikely. He was the youngest, tallest guy in the kollel, and I was the oldest, English, like you know, whatever. In Rav Berkowitz's column, when we were learning all the stuff that we learned, you know, the usual smicha stuff, Shabbos and Kashrus and Tarsus Bach, etc., Rav Berkowitz said, I want to give you a series of shurim on smias. So like we're looking at each other saying like what? Like this, why is this on the kollel syllabus? Why does a group of 20-something, you know, 20-year-old, 30-year-old guys want to be learning about this? And he said, when you learn about it, you'll understand why we're learning about it. And I must tell you that those three or four shirim that he gave were so mind-broadening. I'd never really thought deeply about this topic. It's just not something that men think about, I think, so much. And it was so enriching, so empowering, so interesting. I was the one that ended up teaching in a lot of midrashot and seminaries for the next 15 years. So I was the one that was able to road test this a lot in lots and lots of different places. And really, the book, the thesis of the book is based on his Torah. I mean, there's a lot of me in the book, so the stuff you don't like is the stuff that I put in there. But the stuff that you do like is Rav Berkowitz's, you know, key thesis, which I think is really something that people should learn. So that's the first point. A second point is that there's a really strong overfocus on rules and dress code as equated with tznius. Now, often the conversations on this topic happen in institutions, and institutions have dress codes. All institutions have some kind of dress code, either written or unwritten. I used to be a corporate lawyer, and even in the world that we live in, 2023, if you turn up to a Wall Street law firm for a client meeting dressed in a swimsuit, they're going to tell you, like, you know, this is not a pool party, you've got to go home and get changed. Yeah, but this is 2023, actually it's 2024, sorry, it's 2024. Got to get hell of that. And look, there's a dress code. You can't turn up to a meeting like that. So institutions have dress codes, and dress codes don't need reasons. This is our institution. These are our rules. If you don't like it, then go to another institution. And people, and that's perfectly reasonable. Why should I have to justify the dress code rules in my institution? It's my institution. Once people start equating sneers with dress code, then all of a sudden sneers is just a bunch of rules that don't have any reasons. And people then extrapolate from that and think, well, you know, the rabbi hasn't given me any reasons for this. He doesn't give me any, you know, understanding of that. Maybe all the stuff they're teaching me is based on no reasons. Maybe everything is lacking in, you know, underpinning ideas. And almost never a source is brought for this. It's like, this has to cover your elbow. Like, where's your source? Like, every time you teach everything else, you give a whole raft of sources. You give Gemaras, Chazal, etc., Rishonim, Achronim, and Sneas, I think, has become a topic that is in some ways corroding people's, I mean, maybe this is a bit too grand a statement, but people begin to lose a certain level of confidence in the halakhic process when halachas are delivered without any understanding where they come from. And part of that, as I say, is because there are hundreds of sources about Sneas, but they're not usually relevant to the dress code questions, and therefore people don't know those sources. And hopefully the book has been able to introduce that. We're actually working on a curriculum right now, and that hopefully will be something that will help. I'm sure a lot of schools out there already have, but that will hopefully help people as well. There are some societies, of course, in the Jewish world that basically have dress codes. And it's actually not about sneers, it's a dress code. And you know something? That's fair enough. I imagine that it's much easier in some ways to live in a society where there is a clear dress code for what you have to wear. You know, Hasidic societies often have very clear dress codes for men and for women. And if you want to go, that's fine. There's no problem with that at all. But don't talk to me about sneers. That's your societal dress code, and that's fine. And sneers is, there's an overlap, but this sneers is a different topic. So I wanted to try and help bring some of those sources into play. This is a third point, is a more actually a deeper point and more important point. people expect that halacha should be objective. And on the whole, it is. A lot of halacha forms objective systems. If the Rambam came to Chicago, he might find it a touch cold, but if the Rambam came to Chicago and was asked to give a source on, you know, Hilchot Kashrut to the Chicago community, quite honestly, he could dust off his curriculum from Fostat, from Cairo in 1175, and, you know, chicken is chicken, and milk is milk, and pots are pots, and at the end of the day, if you drop milk in your chicken soup, it's the same sack that you're going to get from, you know, Rabbi Katz in Shared Tzedek, or the Rambam in Cairo. He's going to say, oh, how much dropped in, is it a 60th, etc., etc. Now, you can't come and say, okay, Rambam, this is like Rabbi Moshe, this is 2024, we don't go with a 60th now, we're more 20th kind of people these days. He's going to say, look, you know, I don't care what you feel. This is a rule. The rule is a rule. This is called chukim. Chukim are laws which are completely objective. It doesn't matter who you are, where you live, when you live. The halacha is the halacha. Shabbat is a chok. Shabbat is given as one of the classic chukim, because the laws of Shabbat apply in a pretty objective way in all places. But there are lots of halachas that are not chukim. There are lots of halachas that fall under the category of mishpatim. Actually quite good for the Parsha. A lot of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro laws are Mishpatim. And by the way, Rav Berkovitz also focused very strongly on those, and that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to put in a chapter in the book about Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, because A, because I feel it's important to stress, and B, because there's a lot of interface with Bein Adam L'Chaveiro and Sneers as well, the way that people talk to each other and stuff like that. But if you ask the Rambam to come back to, or to come forward to Chicago in 2024 to teach the laws of Kibud Av V'Em, or the laws of marriage, you would not let him stand up in front of the shul until he had a very significant, like, briefing in how marriage works in today's world. Oh, it's halachot. There are halachas. Yeah, there are halachas, but we don't have four wives today, and one of them isn't 13 years old. And it's just like, it just doesn't work that way, you know? And okay, so what's changed? The answer is mishpatim are halachas, but they're halachas that are very subjectively dependent on the context. Who are your parents? How do they want to be respected? The way that parents and children interact today is not the way that they interacted even 50 years ago. And therefore, tznius is mishpatim, it's not chukim. One of the problems is, people think you can just give a list of rules, and then that's it. One of the problems, challenges with many tznius books in the past that get into any level of detail, is they just produce a list of rules which may be relevant in one place, in one time, but then are being reproduced all around the world for people who are saying that this is not me, this is not who we are, and therefore, how can this be? And that's the problem. If you learn Kibbutz Av V'Em as a list of rules as well, you'll also get that wrong. I heard a story once from one of my Rosh Yeshiva, of a fellow who became very frum very quickly, and he insisted on like doing everything really fast. His parents thought he was crazy. His parents, regular American like people, secular people, whatever. He came across Kibbutz Av V'Em. It's a true story. He came across Kibbutz Av V'Em. He said, this is brilliant. This is going to turn my parents around. This is going to be the thing that they realize that Torah is MS, and all their friends whose children are not religious, you know, they treat them like whatever, and I'm going to treat my parents like the king and queen. And he read somewhere that the way you speak to your parents is the most respectful way you can, which is in the third person. So he comes home and he says, like, would father like to sit down? Would mother like a glass of water? And his parents are looking like what are you talking to, like a moron? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, if you want to walk around with strings hanging out of your pants, that's your business. Yeah? You talk to yourself every time you go to the bathroom, like, okay. You know, that's okay. But, like, don't bring us into your craziness. And he ran back to the Rosh Hashiva. I know who the Rosh Hashiva was. And he said, like, what did I do wrong? He said, you read it like chukim. This is not Hilchos Kashrus. You can't just read a book how to respect your parents. You've got to work out who are my parents. How do these sensitivities apply? It's much easier to teach rules than sensitivities. And sneers is to a very significant... Of course, there are red lines and there are rules. But a lot of it is about sensitivities in the way that Bein Adam L'Chaveiro is similar and Mishpatim work. So that's a third issue. We'll talk about some of the subjectivity of Da'at Yehudit in a minute when we get into it. A fourth point, which is obvious, is that men are pretty clueless, and that applies across the board, but that certainly applies to sneers as well. Men just don't have a clue, or they haven't had a clue. They haven't really been involved in this discussion, and when you actually read the book, as some of you will have read, the vast majority of it is not specific to women. It's about a much broader narrative about men. There was actually a campaign in Israel 4 or 5 summers ago called Mitzah Boxering. You know what's like in Israel? Everything has to be a Mitzah, it's like an operation this, operation that. So a group of religious Zionist young women, I remember it was written up in Makor Rishon, which is one of the papers in Israel in Hebrew. They said, look, you know, these young, from women, 10, 18, 19, 20, said, we go hiking in the summer with our friends, we go around the forests, we have a good time, it's good, clean fun, and then all these yeshiva guys, young yeshivati guys, who are from guys, they're learning in yeshivot, whatever, they run into this mayan, this pool, whatever, and they all strip off their clothes, and they're all like down to their boxer shorts, splashing around, and we're standing there, like, are you not conscious of the fact that what you're doing is not appropriate for a bunch of grown-up yeshiva studying men? No. Clueless, completely oblivious. They were, what are you even talking about? So that's one of the reasons we wanted to. And again, I'm not trying to traumatize men by sneers in the same way that lots of women have been traumatized. That will help nobody. Yeah, it's like, you know, the whole discussion, should you teach Gemara to women? Well, yes, if you teach it well. If you just teach it like, and you upset everyone, like you upset all the men, so that's not a mitzvah, but that's a different discussion, which is not for now. So that's bringing men into the discussion is part of it. And the last 3 points are also important. I'll just mention them briefly, and then we'll learn a couple of sources. Sneers is unfortunately used as one of the, it's a little bit weaponized, maybe a lot, one of the ways in which people delegitimize other communities, and they use sneers as a way of judging other people. Now, don't worry, even if you take sneers out of that whole debate, there'll be other things that people use. You know, you carry under this era of weird, under this haksha, people, it's a problem, okay? It's always been a problem, and it's also to judge people. But using sneers in a way which is a tool against other people, if you could take that out of the discussion, it wouldn't solve everything, but it would go a long way to taking a lot of the pain and the judgment and the feeling of judgment out of it. That's something which hopefully, you know, the lack of respect and which I'm sure a lot of people have felt, just the way people are talked to, you know. I've taught in women's schools to have enough nightmare stories of people, things that people have heard, the way that they've been spoken to. It's just not the way you speak to people. It's just not appropriate. I remember one particular young woman told me that she was wearing too short sleeves for her school rules in a place that was very, very hot. And the teacher said to her, why are your sleeves so short? And she said, look, it's really hot here. And she said, well, you'll find it's a lot hotter in Gehenna. You know, like, who speaks that way to anybody about anything? Somehow or other, I sneers often brings out this kind of lack of respect and thought through way of speaking to people, because people get a bit fanatical about it. I think there are reasons for that, which I'm not getting into now. The last 2 things are a bit more technical, which we will talk about. I think the book seeks to address the relationship between erva and sneers. These are 2 things which are often confused and conflated one with each other. And they're actually 2 different concepts. You'll see they appear in the same posik. They're counted as 2 different mitzvot. We'll talk about them when we see the posik in a minute. But they are 2 different ideas. Erva is about privacy, nakedness, or whatever. There are certain objective halachot that Chazal, it's based on a Torah mitzvah, but Chazal expanded this to say that when there are people who are not wearing clothes, for whatever reason, then there are limitations on what you can say in front of them in terms of Divrei Torah, davening, Kriya Shema, brochas, etc., etc. The issue of erva is therefore an objective one. If there's someone standing in front of me without any clothes on, then I can't daven mincha. Okay. Is that anything to do with sneers? Well, it depends on the context. If this person is taking a shower, then the way, as far as I'm aware, this is probably the minhag in Chicago as well, the way that people dress in the shower is they don't wear any clothes in the shower. I've not done a survey, but like, and therefore, is this person in the shower? And it's amazing when you ask people, if a person's dressed, like undressed in the shower, is that sanua? A lot of my students say, no, that's not sanua. They are, no, of course that's sanua. It's totally sanua. How are you meant to be dressed in the shower? Is there any erva? Yeah, the total. And the answer is, can you daven mincha there? No, go find somewhere else to daven mincha. And you might think this is a strange thing to say, but like the actually discussions in the Gemara do come up in those contexts. Some guy swimming in the pool with no clothes on, or in the lake or whatever, and he realizes it's time for the Kriyat Shema. And the Gemara asks, can you say the Kriyat Shema with no clothes on, etc.? So, I mean, that's a little bit of an extreme situation, but you can see how it would come up, he has to say, by this man. So the confusion of Erva and Snias is a problem. They are interrelated, and perhaps the most complicated chapter in the book, and the one that perhaps I find myself of least completely got my head around, is the interrelation between Erva and Snias, because they do, especially when it comes to hair covering, there is a much closer connection between them, and that comes out in the tshuvas, etc., etc. But the laws of Snias are not based on the obligation to cover Erva on the whole, and that's an important mindset change and understanding. They do interreact, but one is not based on the other. The last point here I put is an overfocus on Lifnei Iver. This is an obvious point, but it needs to be said. Lifnei Iver is a Torah mitzvah. Lifnei Iver means that if you put somebody else in a compromising position by in some way encouraging them to break halacha, it could be giving them non-kosher food. It could be, I mean, there's a whole debate. Can you invite people for Shabbos if they're going to drive on Shabbos? I'm not getting into that debate. I'm not a posek, and I'm not discussing that right now. But yeah, Lifnei Iver is a real question. You're not allowed to be insensitive. It's a bein adam l'chaveiro. Lifnei Iver lo yitzein michshol. A lot of people have understood through their Snias education that really Lifnei Iver is driving Snias. It's a certain narrative, which is that basically women are told that men are unexploded bombs, and they're walking around the street, and if you go out wearing the wrong thing, then boom, there's another one gone, like, whoa. They're going like all over the place. And therefore you have a responsibility to make sure that you don't cause people to do those avers. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not that Lifnei Iver is irrelevant. And actually, this is a discussion I've had with some people who've said, yeah, you can't have any Lifnei Iver connection there. It's not fair to put that. And I says, no, of course it's relevant. It's consideration is always going to be relevant if you're putting people in compromising in positions. But it's not the basis of Snias. Men have an obligation to keep their own eyes focused in the right way and their own minds focused in the right way. And ultimately, that obligation and that onus of responsibility is on them. The Gemara puts this very clearly. It says if a man looks inappropriately at the woman's little finger, then it's all on him. They pick the little finger because the little finger is the one place that nobody would ever suggest there was any Snias obligation to cover your little finger. You don't have to walk around with gloves on if there are men who have problems looking at women's hands. Okay? And it's very important to understand that. So yes, Lifnei Iver is relevant. It's not that it's irrelevant, but it's not the basis of the mitzvah. And that's a very important point. Okay, having said all of those things by way of rather sort of too lengthy introduction, let me just take you through, just for 10 minutes, the basic outline of the thesis in the book of Rav Berkowitz's thesis. It's basically built on three platforms, and we haven't got time to do all of them tonight. Again, you can pick up the book and read it and see what you think. The first one is the Torah mitzvah. When people talk about a conversation about Snias, they often start with Micha. Micha is the first place in the Tanakh where the word Sniut comes, Vatznei Alechet, okay, walking in a way with Sniut. I'm not getting into the translation of that directly now, but that is not the Torah mitzvah. You cannot base the Torah mitzvah on a posik in Micha, by definition, because it's not in the Torah. Look in number one. You have to have, and this is very apposite, a lot of our soldiers are in battle as we speak in a Jewish army, trying to work out what is the appropriate way to behave as a soldier in an extreme situation. Says the Pasuk, you have to have a set place outside the camp. And when you need the bathroom, you'll go out there. And you have to have a shovel on your pack. And again, the soldier has to be as light as they possibly can, and they don't want to have any excess weight, but you have to have a shovel. This is a tool of war, says the Torah. When you have to go out to use the bathroom, use the shovel, dig a little hole, do what you have to do, and cover up what comes out of you. Key, because this is a reason clearly given. It's not some mystical understood mitzvah. Ki Hashem Elokecha mitalech bekerav mechanecha, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in your machaneh. Your machane, whatever your machane is, your soldier, your camp, your school, your workplace, your home, whatever your machane is, Hashem has to be in your machane. Latzilcho, latet oivecho, lefanecha. Who's going to save you? If there are bullets flying around and whizzing around, you know, an inch this way or that way is life or death. You need HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a presence, that you're aware of that presence in your camp. V'haya machanecha kadosh. And therefore your camp has to be kadosh. This is why the sanctified, special, appropriate, that's why the Torah is going out of its way to stress, you have to have a battlefield bathroom. V'lo yirbecha erva stava. Here's that word erva in the Torah. Don't let there be anything vulgar, inappropriate with you. V'shav macharech, and then God will turn away from you. Now when the smack, the Sefer Mitzvah Katan, one of the people who counts the 613 mitzvot, counts these his mitzvot, he counts one of them as tzniut, and one of them as erva. Two separate mitzvot. And I brought you, just look for a second, in number two, actually not number two, because I don't want to get into Micha right now, but if you look for a second in number four, sorry, it's number four that I was looking at. So look at number four at the bottom of the page for a second. Tzniut is paskened in the Shulchan Aruch, at the very beginning, in Siman Aleph, in Siman Bet, and in Siman Gimel. And if you look here in number four, he says, the Shulchan Aruch says, Yehet Sanua, a person has to be tsanua bebeit hakiseh, in the bathroom. Why specifically in the bathroom? Because the bathroom is the place that nobody else goes with you. And that's the key point here. That tsniut, in its basic essence, and this is what Rav Berkowitz gives us the platform, is your own sense of appropriateness and dignity, that certain things are inappropriate and beneath your dignity, and certain things are appropriate. And wherever you are, even if there's nowhere else, no one else looking anywhere, you need to be behaving and acting and speaking in a way which is appropriate for who you are, even in the most private places. This psak is based on a Gemara in Brachos, which I didn't bring on the sheet, but the Gemara in Brachos says Rav Nachman was at a funeral, and the guy standing up to give the hespedim, or the hesped for this man who died, you know, they always say nice things about people who die, and you know, I'm not arguing with that, but the guy stood up and said, oh, this man that we're burying today, he was such a tsanua, he was a big tsanua. And Rav Nachman went up to him, the Gemara says, often says, like, how do you know? He was, yeah, but it was always put together. Look, at that could have all been fake. It could have all been just a sham, an external show. Did you ever, says Rav Nachman to this masped, did you ever go to the toilet with him? He's like, what? He says, if you never went to the bathroom, you don't know if he was tsanua or not. And the Shulchan Aruch brings in Siman Betz also, when people used to go to sleep back in the day, they didn't used to wear pajamas. Pajamas is a relatively modern thing. Certainly if they had, were in a hot country, they had whatever clothes they had for the day, they took them off, they put a sheet on, they just slept under a sheet with no clothes on. Okay, fine, there's no halacha, you have to wear pajamas. The Shulchan Aruch therefore says, not in this Siman, the Siman before, when you get up in the morning, don't just throw off the sheet and walk to the closet and open the closet and say, okay, what shall I wear today? Oh, I can't decide. I go and make a scrambled egg and check my emails like while I think about it. And you're like, you're sitting there, you know? And like, all the blinds are closed, all the curtains are closed, nobody can see me. It's very tsanua. The answer is no. It's the exact opposite of tsniut. Because you know that you're doing something which is not appropriate, and you'll be scandalized, or people you know will be scandalized if they know, but you don't care because there's nobody else there. And that's exactly what the Shulchan Aruch says. Never say, Hinanei b'chadre chadarim mira eini. Who can see me? No one can see me. The whole point is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is present, has to be present in our machane. And again, not in a kind of judgmental, there's a big eye in the sky following me around, judging me. That's a very pagan way of thinking about God. It's the sense that God's going to come in if I let God in. I need to bring God in to the machana and behave in an appropriate way. There's an interesting, as a side issue, but I just want to mention it. I brought you number three, which I'm not going to do inside, but he stresses this idea of shvisi Hashem lenegdi tamid, that I put Hashem before me. This is the opening words of the Shulchan Aruch in the Ramah, that I live in a way which is lifnei Hashem. I'm going to be appropriate lifnei Hashem. And there's this exchange between David and Michal. It's in a footnote, I think, in the book, where if you remember the story in the Shmuel Aleph there, where David is bringing up the Aron Kodesh to the Beis HaMikdash, and he's dancing around, and his arms are flailing about, and he's, you know, going crazy with the Aron Kodesh. It's a big deal. The first time they tried to bring it up, it didn't work out with Uzzah, etc. And Michal, who is from the family of Shaul, Her father was the king, right? And the family is praised for his tzniut, etc., etc. She sarcastically greets him. Remember the story? He comes in and she says, "Oh, how dignified was the king today, flailing his arms around so that all the servants could see the king's arms." And he just looks at her and he says, basically, to paraphrase it, "You've been reading the wrong books on tzniut." He says to her, he said, "I am the king and your father is not, because your father was too bothered thinking about what everybody else was thinking and not what was appropriate, Lifnei Hashem." And he quotes this, look at the psukim there, he says, Lifnei Hashem, like three times, Lifnei Hashem, Lifnei Hashem. I was doing the appropriate thing to be Lifnei Hashem. Why do I care what the servants think? It's not about the servants. It's about the way that it was appropriate to be. And that's an important starting point. Okay, that's part one. Part two, just flip over the page, there's a whole discussion about the sota, which I'm not going to get into in detail, because that's going to take us off into a lot of other discussions. But of course, it does make a difference what, you know, how people behave in public. There are certain objective standards. Yes, there's always going to be the subjective standard of is this appropriate for me? Who I am, what age I am, etc. And we kind of all intuitively know this to be the case. Let me just give you a little example before we go on. Let's imagine there's a 22-year-old young woman and she has a friend, also 22, they've been childhood friends forever. The 22-year-old's got married, she's wearing her beautiful kala shetel, and they're all really excited. And she goes home with her newly married friend, and they go into the house, just the two women together, and they sit down, and her friend takes off her, you know, shetel and or snood or whatever. No one wears a snood today. Like, whatever she wears, a mitpachat, and all her hair kind of falls down, and they're just sitting together, schmoozing on the floor. Is there anything wrong with that, halachically? Any problem with that? No, they're two women on their own, inside the house, in the private area. There's no men anywhere. Okay, yeah, there are people, psychics, that say you have to cover your hair in the house. Okay, but that's not the mainstream halach. Halachically, this is fine. Now replace that scenario with this young woman going home with the Rebbetzin of the community, and they walk into the house, and as they walk into the house, the Rebbetzin pulls off her shetel, all her grey hair falls out, whatever. I mean, whatever, I'm getting a bit too graphic. Yeah. But it's mortifying. Like it's... Like, no, but the halachically, what's the problem? It's just two women in the house on their own. In terms of the dinim of hair covering, there's no difference. But there's a world of difference in terms of what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, who you... There's always going to be that subjective issue. But, however, it can't always be subjective. And the other point, which I just want to maybe talk about for a few minutes, and then we'll stop and we'll have some questions, is the issue of da'yuhud. And that's really when it all becomes actually very practical. The Gemara discusses da'yuhud in the context of the ksuba. When a man and a woman get married, as you know, he gives her a financial settlement, he makes a promise that if they get divorced, etc., you know, she gets her money. And the Gemara talks about if he misbehaves in the marriage, she has to divorce her, give her the money, she can go away and find a better guy, better look next time. If she misbehaves in the marriage, then she loses the ksuba, they get divorced, she loses the financial settlement. Fine. The rules that are applied as to what situation she would lose her ksuba are called Dat Moshe and Dat Yehudit. Again, I don't have time to go into a whole analysis, but Dat Yehudit is the key thing here. There's this, Chazal created this concept of Das Yehudis, which, by the way, when I ask people, 9 out of 10 think it's Das with an ayin, which is like some kind of knowledge thing, and Yehudis is something to do with Jewish women. Neither of those things are true. Dat Yehudit just means the Jewish rules. The rules of the Jews. And Chazal said that we can't just leave it for everybody to be completely subjective about what they feel is dignified and not dignified. There is a list of in this Gemara in Ksubas, in this Mishnah in Ksubas, in this Tosefta, of objective things that if a woman behaves like this in public, then she loses her Ksuba. Okay, is that the whole list? Is that everything? I'm not going through the list. There are things like she's flirting in the shuk, she's uncovering arms in the shuk, and there's a lot of detail there. But Rashi, and this is the key source maybe for the whole evening, Rashi number 6 says, Das Yehudis is the following, Shenahagu b'nois Yisrael afagav de loksiva. And this is perhaps the most important source in Sneers that you can have. Dat Yehudit, meaning the rules of Sneers, and Dat Yehudit equals Sneers. which apply to any particular person. Now, it's obviously focused on women, although actually one of the sources I was very excited about, which is, I actually found an explicit source, which I put into the second edition, where Das Yehudis is on men as well, which is really interesting, but that's not for now. You can look at that another time. But Rashi here is saying that women in every society, Nahagu Benois Yisrael, the women adapt certain practices which they consider to be appropriate and dignified for the women in that society. Even though they're not written down anywhere, there's no source for them. Because the source is the minhag. The minhag is a minhag. Minhagim come from the ground up. You don't look for sources as to why Ashkenazim don't eat rice on Pesach. It doesn't say that anywhere in the Tanakh, and the Gemara is explicit that one of the things you're going to have on your Seder table is a bowl of rice. Okay, minhag is minhag. I'm not going to argue. 1,000 years of Ashkenazim have decided we're not going to eat rice on Pesach. That's binding. I can't eat rice on Pesach. I know I don't look Ashkenazi, I really am. I can't eat rice on Pesach. That's it, so. Well, you can do Hataras L'dorim. No, I can't take the entire Ashkenazi community for the last millennium to the Beis Din to try and do Hataras. The only way I can do it is by leading the community, which actually is incredibly difficult. How do I stop being an Ashkenazi? I've been thinking about this for a long time. And not for the rice either. And I'll take the slichas as well in Elul, you know? Happy slichas is like, I don't know, it's much better I think in some ways. But it's community based. The guy that lives next door to me where I live in Alon Shvud, he's a Sephardi. And he eats rice on Pesach. Am I more religious than him? Of course not. I have my minhag. He has his minhag. And Rashi says, Snias works in terms of Das Yehudis the same way. Women in every society, after the list of like objective red lines, which is not that many, but there are some, have to say, okay, we also feel that this is appropriate for us in our society. And therefore you see this in all sorts of areas. Hasidic women, when they wear a head covering, they often put a little something on top. You know, okay, so you're going to turn around and say, well, maybe that's just a dress code. I'm not sure. I think they do it because they feel it's dignified. It's an appropriate way to be dressed in public. I don't think that there's any, like, psak that's come down and said that that's what all the women have to do. The women, I mean, you could write a PhD on this, I'm not 100% sure, but the women have evolved these minhagim. And different women evolve different minhagim. Some in some societies, wearing tights is considered to be stockings. Excuse me, I'm English and American. Wearing stockings is considered to be an appropriate way to be dressed in public, and not to be wearing stockings is not appropriate. And in other societies, that the women don't feel that. Again, not just the women, but the women who are attuned to sneers. You can't have a minhag said by people who are not conscious of the factors in either direction, but the women who are attuned to these things, conscious of these things. People have often asked me, and it's a perfectly good logical shaila, like, why would you have to wear tight stockings if you can see through them? Like, what does that achieve exactly? You can see right through it. Meaning, try just go out in one big stocking with nothing else on. Like, you won't get 5 feet down the road. Like, so what does it achieve? And people have asked me, like, what, how come I have to wear stockings when you can see right through them? The answer is, well, it's nothing to do with seeing right through them. If you had an objective halakhic obligation to cover the lower leg, you're 100% right. It wouldn't work. You can see right through it. But the stockings are based on the assumption that we pass them that you do not have an objective, which is the opinion of the Mishnah Berurah, which almost everybody goes with, maybe not in Bnei Brak, but whatever. No, they have the Chazon Ish, they have a different approach there. But since there is no objective obligation to cover the lower leg, so then people, different societies have developed their own Das Yehudis about what they feel is appropriate. Okay, you're going to argue with Minhag? Minhag is Minhag. You know, it is what it is. You can't argue with it. So you don't like it, you go to a different community and be part of that community. This is a very important point, which I think is often overlooked, and you can talk a lot about this. Of course, it raises the $64,000 question, which is, well, so what is community? I don't know what community I'm in. It was easier back in the day. 100 years ago, people lived in Minsk or Pinsk or Dvinsk, and like Ashkenazi bias, sorry. And like, you just lived there, you grew up there, you lived there, you died there, and you knew what you did in Pinsk, and it wasn't what they did in Minsk. And by the way, this is a real issue. I gave a show on Thursday night. If you look at the issue of, this is completely unrelated, but separate seating at weddings, you have two poskim in Poland in the 16th century, the Lavush and the Yamshil Shlomo, one of them who says, we would never have mixed seating at a wedding. It's osa, you can't bench, da 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 da. And the other one who says, I don't know what you're talking about. We have men and women sitting like together and they're used to dealing with each other and they don't get carried away and it's fine and it works. Like, this is like just two towns in Poland. So people really have different minhagim. Today, people don't live in one place. They go to this school and this shul and this pool and they have this like this and this like that. And then working out what your community is becomes very stressful. And then you say, well, your community is based on your hashkafa. Okay, that's the best way to wind people up. Because then you have enormous hashkafa anxiety. Like, well, I don't know what my hashkafa is. And I don't even know what hashkafa is. And this is one of the reasons why this is such a difficult thing, because it depends on community, and community is kind of by association now, and people say, well, I don't know exactly which I'm in, and it depends on the day of the week, and etc. So there's a lot about that in the book, but these are all reasons why tznius is complex, interesting, but complex, and much more complex than people think. And that's all really, really developed in the book, and Bezrat Hashem a lot more. I'm not going to speak for a lot longer now. I've spoken for my 40 minutes, probably a touch over. But there's a lot more to say. I'm happy to answer some questions if I can. If anyone has any questions, I'm more than happy to address them. I take the easy route. People ask me questions. Well, in practice, what should I say to my 12-year-old daughter when she says X? And the answer is, oh, well, that's a chinuch question. You know, I wrote a book on sneers, not a book on chinuch. But of course, there are elements of, you know, that. And the essays at the beginning, by the way, in the anthology section, do deal with those kind of issues much more. Brocha and I were very insistent the book should not just be my halachic bit at the back, but it's the anthology section has been very, I think, helpful. People have given me a lot of feedback. And we were very particular to try and find women from lots of different parts of the Jewish community. And that's something we're very proud of in the book. There are women who's written for that anthology section, really from almost every part of the Jewish community. The big missing part was we didn't have a Sephardi, not because we didn't ask anybody, but we just didn't end up getting an essay that that's something that we've changed in the second edition. We have a fantastic article from a Sephardi teacher, influencer, and that's one of the things I was keen to put in. Anyway, that's a side issue. Question? Yes. Hi.
I'm not going to bring this as well, but so it's like with Dasi Hodes, I understand the concept in I think a very basic way, but my concern is around, you know, this idea of groupthink, right?
Yes.
And sometimes when we talk about, like, you know, humans, we're not perfect. And
yes.
Usually when you have a large group of people kind of just going with what it seems like the right thing, and then we all just agree we're going to do that.
Yes.
That can often go in the very wrong directions. And
yes.
Things that we don't agree
I hear what
now,
you're saying.
What are the...
Okay, that's a very good question. The halacha is very optimistic about the inherent common sense and halachic focus of the Jewish community. There's a whole discussion about this in Pesachim, where Hillel, you know, comes and they ask him a shaila, you know, of a certain thing in Hilchas Korban Pesach. We're not getting into it now, and he doesn't know the answer, and he says, okay, we'll have to see what people do. And then the next day, they saw what people were doing. And he said, oh, yeah, that's exactly what I learned. That's right. And the Gemara says that about the Jewish people, im lav neviim haim, if they're not actual neviim, b'nei neviim haim, they're trainee neviim. There's an element of nevuah in the broader... Now, again, we're not talking about, well, most Jewish people drive on Shabbos, so that means you can drive on Shabbos. The people who drive on Shabbos have not had access to an education which helps them understand what it means to not drive on Shabbos. But I think the halacha says, if the women of the community are together, organically, creating something, which is the Dat Yehudit, then we rely on that. Now, again, in some communities, it's not the women of the community doing this. It's something that often doesn't work very well, and there's like a rabbi, or often a rebbetzin, or a committee of some kind, deciding this is what we all have to wear. That's fine, but that's called dress code, and that's, you know, I'm not going to argue with it, but it's nothing to do with sneers. I'll give you an example that I feel a little bit I like Meir Sha'arim. I've always liked Meir Sha'arim. I just feel he just never changes. When I was a kid, I used to go to Meir Sha'arim, and I feel it's just the same people just still walking around there. They all look the same as when I was a kid. Like, I'm the only one who got older, and everyone else is the same. When you actually spend a bit of time in Meir Sha'arim and Geula, and I remember with my daughter, we went a few times before we got married, and we did a little bit before she got married, and we did a little bit of like people watching. You see, for example, sometimes all the women there are wearing black and white, and then you come back a year later, and they're all wearing kind of pastels and shades of, like, you know, it's not all black and white. And I mean, you can try this; you can go and see. And I don't think any rabbi stood up at the beginning of that year in Rosh Hashanah and went, like, this year orange is in. You know, the women just evolved. And now you're going to tell me, well, you don't know, it's much harder than you think, it all depends on what they put in the stores. And you're right, and that's all part of it, like what's in the shops. But what's in the shops is what they think people want to buy, and it's all, but there's a process which is an organic process, and the women work it out. That's what the Rashi says it should be, that the women have to work it out. And you know, I'll tell you, I mean, I think this applies to men to a significant degree as well. I remember when I was learning in yeshiva in Yerushalayim. So they used to say, everybody knows that I was in a very Haredi yeshiva. I was in Eretz Yisrael, it's an offshoot from Hebron. But everyone knows that in Yerushalayim, the boys have to wear long sleeves. And in Bnei Brak, the yeshiva boys, were in Ponovich, they wear short sleeves. Now, I don't think it's because it's hot in Bnei Brak and it's not hot in Yerushalayim. Because it's hot everywhere and it's freezing everywhere because they have air conditioning and all the bad in Batei Midrash. It's because in Yerushalayim, the men felt that it was more tzanua, they should wear long sleeves. And in Bnei Brak, they didn't feel it was an issue. I don't think anyone paskened that. I think it evolved. I don't know if groupthink is in that sense a bad thing. As long as it's done in a way which is, so it doesn't cross any halakhic lines. You can't suddenly have a minhag to do something which is clearly osa. But I think we are quite optimistic about the Jewish people. If we allow them to think.
That optimism still applies even in today's society.
Look, I think
it. I
think
it.
I don't know.
Go well with groupthink.
You're right.
Like, how do you know?
It's a good question. You're asking a societal question.
Yeah.
In my personal opinion, if people could be less insecure, then it would work a lot better. People are too busy worrying about what everyone's going to say, but okay, I'm not going to fix that problem in 5 minutes. But one of the things that Rav Berkowitz is very keen on is making sure that women understand that they have this, like, obligation, stroke, empowerment. I don't want to use a very kind of feminist word, but the women have to take responsibility for the nuances and the subtleties of this, and not allow it to be done by sneers police or committees that decide this. Again, if you want to live in a dress code society, that's fine. Maybe that's easier, but that's not what sneers is. Question? Any other questions? Yes.
I kind of get it, but then there's like a logical question of Hashem created human beings and all of every part of them. So
yes.
Why is erva considered as something that's disgusting to him?
Well, okay, you used the word disgusting. I never used the word disgusting. Erva is considered as something which is inappropriate in front of Divrei Torah. Divrei Torah. It's a din in Divrei Torah. It's nothing to do with the erva. The erva. There's nothing wrong with the erva. That in the wrong context, you can't say Divrei Torah in front of people who are not dressed, because it's not covered haTorah. That's the point. It's not about there's something disgusting about your arms or legs or a man. Erva applies to men as well. Yeah. So there's nothing disgusting about it. And lahefech. Actually, I'll mention this now. But the Mishnah Brura actually paskens that when back in the old days they didn't used to have swimwear. When they used to go to the pool or not the lake or whatever, they just used to take off their clothes and put them by the side and then go for a swim and then come back out. The Mishnah Brura actually brings down a halacha that if a man is walking around like covering himself because he's embarrassed about his, that's actually also because he looks like he's embarrassed about his bris milah. So there's nothing wrong in the right circumstances with being dressed this way or undressed that way. But when there's Divrei Torah there, then that's just not appropriate. Because it's not covered HaTorah. And it comes out of this pasuk. That when you've got Shekhinah, when you've got Hashem and Erevah, there's just two things. So I don't think it's... Now, it can easily be turned into a kind of body-shaming kind of thing, but there's enough sources that very explicitly say it's not about that. There's nothing wrong with the human body. It's just about the interaction of the human body and Divrei Torah, which is... And also with other things in Divrei Torah, just not cover that Torah.
So I guess my question is more on the transition of Erevah into Tzmius aspects, because you say it's not appropriate to have Erevah uncovered, like in general, when you're just doing things around in life.
I don't know. Maybe if it is appropriate, it is. If it's not, it's not. I don't know. You have to decide what isn't appropriate. I can't answer that question for you. Like, people ask, what pajamas is Sanua? By the way, I have a little bit of a hang-up about people saying what pajamas is Sneas. Sneas is not an adjective. Sneas is a noun. Forgive me for that, but like, there's a word, it's Sanua. Snua, if you want to insist on it, but it's not Sneas. Okay, if I could just try and stop that, my pedantry would like, right? So, what pajamas are Sanua? The answer is, I don't know. I don't know. There's no dashing hoodies as to what people wear for their pajamas. It's what you think is appropriate. Maybe difference if you're 18, difference if you're 88, and difference if you're in a dorm. I don't know. But it hasn't sort of morphed into something which is, you know, wrong. It's fine in the right context. Yes. Anything else? Okay, well, look, I hope you felt that this has been helpful or useful or interesting on some level. I feel that the book has, you know, done a lot of good, and Baruch Hashem, people have supported it. People who are here also supported it, and great, very grateful for that support. We'd like to turn it into a curriculum, and I feel I need to kind of move on to something else now. I don't want to, you know, talk about SNES for the rest of my life. But in the meantime, I think there still is a healthy conversation to be had, and I'd encourage you to broaden that and to have that and to learn that. I'm very gratified. I'll just finish with this, by the fact that I hear that the book is reaching lots and lots of different parts of the community, which is really what we wanted. Two little examples of that. In the last month or two, I've been told that there are people learning the book in Yiddish in Williamsburg. I actually met the woman who's leading the Chabura in Yiddish, translating it into Yiddish in Williamsburg. And another person sent me an email saying they're learning it in BBYO.
Wow.
You have that in America, BBYO?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, fine. So I reckon these women in Williamsburg probably never met these men or women in BBYO, but I'm very happy that they're learning the book. And if it brings them together in some way, then that's not such a bad thing either. Yeah?
I just wanted to plant a seed, since we've moved on.
Yes, please. Please, yes. Plant a seed. Yes. Yes.
You had a footnote in the book. I'm currently halfway through. It's excellent.
Okay.
About materialism. Like, it would be such a good book. You said, like, it's such a shame there isn't more about this Pinnock and whatever. And, like, I think for a lot of people it's very harsh.
I understand. I don't know if I'm the person to write that book. I don't know if that book has not yet been written. Someone like, you know, Rabbi Daniel Feldman's probably written a pretty good book or something like that. I mean, the problem is you can't just write a book about that. As long as high school is about grades, which is about college, which is about job, which is about money, then your chinuch from the very beginning of high school is that what's important is how much money you make. And I don't know if there's a way you can... In Israel, that is not the case, by the way. There's plenty of materialism in Israel as well, but high school has got nothing to do with grades, which is frustrating as a parent of a child in high school, you know, when you just sit in the sandpit and sing songs about how happy you are. And that's great, but, like, who's going to earn any money? But I'm just saying. But I don't think a book on materialism is going to change anyone's... It's going to be another book that they read and think, oh, yeah, now, you know, work harder for your grades. There just needs to be such a sea change of attitude. I suppose you can do it. I don't know how you do it exactly. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure a book would...
Hopefully not the next...
Look, somebody at lunch told me that they're paying $20,000 a year for their kids to go to kindergarten. Like, I don't know. Is that how much it costs to go to kindergarten? I mean, it is, but how are you going to break out of that and someone say, well, you shouldn't have to pay that? I don't know. It's not for me to say. The whole society is structured that way. America is worse than most places on that, because the whole society is figured is around that. I'm not trying to criticize. England's not very good either. But it doesn't cost that to go to kindergarten. Okay. But yes, let me think about it and see who's, you know, interested. Okay, thank you. Yes.
While she's mentioning that.
Yes.
What about, like, this is all about clothing and how people dress. Yeah. What about sneak behaviors?
Yeah, well, the book does talk about that a bit. Because at the end of the day, it's not about clothing. The book is the book doesn't talk about clothing only. It's a lot about appropriateness in all parts of life, the way you speak, the way you behave. It said 100%. But that's a very private thing. That's you know, that's a very individual thing. You don't have to be meek and mild and submissive to be a tzanua person. You can be outgoing and loud on a certain level. So I think people have to think about that for themselves. Are you thinking of something in specific that you find frustrating?
Kind of.
Right. Look, you know, I think having if people can have a conversation about it, and the materialism thing is very important as well. Yeah, you're right. How you shift behavior patterns is a good question. Maybe talking more about it. Maybe more Rabbonim should stand up in shul and talk about it. But again, it's easy to talk about. Like Maisa, how do people get out of it? We have to, you know, really think that through. Okay, ladies, thank you very much. Thank you again to our hosts, Nili and Mrs. Cohen as well.
Have a newborn at home, sir.